जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। यमुना तीरा वनचारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्र सत श्री श्रीमद His Divine Grace से भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। कंठराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। निताय गो प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। All grace to the assembled devotees, all grace to the assembled devotees, all grace to the assembled devotees, all grace to Sri Sri Guru Gaurango. Hare Krishna. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, The Appearance of Lord Varaha, Text Number 10. Word meanings, etavati, just exactly like this, atmajai, by the offspring, vira, O hero, karya, should be performed, he certainly, apachiti, worship, Gurau, unto the superior, Shaktya, with full capacity, Apramattai, by the sane, Grihyeta, should be accepted, Sa-adaram, with great delight, Gata-matsarai, by those who are beyond the limit of envy. Etavatyatmacharvira karyaya pachitir gurau shaktya pramattar griheta sadaram gatamatsarai Etavatyatmacharvira karyaya pachite gurau shaktya pramatta griheta sadaram gatamatsarai. Shaktya pramatta griheta sadaram gatamatsarai. Etavatyatmacharvira karyaya pachitir gurau shaktya pramatta griheta sadaram gatamatsarai. Etavatyatmacharvira karyaya pachite gurau shaktya pramatta griheta sadaram gatamatsarai. Translation. O hero, your example is quite befitting a son in relationship with his father. This sort of adoration for the superior is required. One who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane accepts the order of his father with great delight and executes it to his full capacity. So this is Brahma speaking to Swayambhuva Manu. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When the four previous sons of Brahma, the sages Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanandana, and Sanat Kumar, refused to obey their father, Brahma was mortified, and his anger was manifested in the shape of Rudra. That incident was not forgotten by Brahma, and therefore the obedience of Manu
Swayambhuva was very encouraging. From the material point of view, the four sages' disobedience to the order of their father was certainly abominable. But because such disobedience was for a higher purpose, they were free from the reaction of disobedience. Those who disobey their fathers on material grounds, however, are surely subjected to disciplinary reaction for such disobedience. Manu's obedience to his father on material grounds was certainly free from envy. And in the material world, it is imperative for ordinary men to follow the example of Manu. Om jnanatimirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So before I begin trying to talk about this verse, there's a couple of things I wanted to mention. I'm noticing a lot lately, I've been reading a lot of Prabhupada's Leela, and it seems like there are a lot of things that Prabhupada said that never kind of made it down to the all of the devotees. So there's a couple of things I wanted to mention. Have nothing to do with this class, I just wanted to say it. This is a quote from Jayadvaita Swami's book about Srila Prabhupada's Kirtan standards, which I recommend everyone should read, but whatever that, take that for what it's worth. I think it's very important. We hear what Prabhupada had to say, how he reacted to certain things regarding Kirtan. Anyway, this is a quote. This is one of those things that I've heard about a long time ago, and it still goes on. And I wonder why. So this is an excerpt from his book. He says, Jayadvaita Swami writes, "We often hear, tacked on to the end of Sri Guru Vandana, the lines, Prabhupada Loyalo Sharana, or Dui Pade Loyalo Sharana. Bhaktivikas Swami says that these two interpolations, an interpolation means an addition." That's another, I was going to start with this point. Prabhupada really didn't like us adding things. He said, you always want to change things and add things. And he would stop kirtans because people were starting the mantra, but with bhaja Hare Krishna and that kind of thing. So this is an interpolation. In other words, this isn't part of the song. So Bhaktivikas Swami says that these two interpolations are, quote, popular, unnecessary, and meaningless. And Krishna Abhishek Das, whom we all know, who just gave class, Dr. Abhishek Ghosh, a Gaudiya Vaishnav scholar and a native Bengali speaker, has confirmed to me that these lines don't make any sense. So I suggest that devotees get rid of these, stop saying these in our Tri Guru. Actually, I remember the first time I heard this, I thought, because it was before, I just had some printout, you know, it was years ago, actually, quite some time ago. I heard somebody singing this. I thought, oh, I know that this Guru Vandana song goes on. There's other verses to it. So I thought, well, maybe this is the next line of the song. But it's not. It's just something somebody came up with. I don't know, picked up from the Gaudiya Math or something or other. And devotees started saying it, and some devotees thought, well, this is cool. Let me sing this too, and even though it doesn't make any sense. How do we apply? Well, it depends on your relationship with the person, I suppose. I don't know. Somehow the word has to get out there. I don't know. Of course, I've found sometimes I correct people and they still do it anyway. Anyway, I'm just telling you. So here's another thing. I've mentioned this one before, actually. When Srila Prabhupada took sannyas, his sannyas guru, Bhakti Pragyana Keshava Maharaj, he selected from a list of sannyas names that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati himself had compiled. He had researched on sannyas, and he came up with these 100 names for sannyas. So there are a lot of that we know. Sridhar Maharaj, Tirtha Maharaj, Puri Maharaj, Madhava Maharaj, and so on. So in the Gaudiya Math, Srila Prabhupada is known as Swami Maharaj. And there's a reason for that. It's because Swami comes from that list of 100 names. It's actually Prabhupada Sannyas' name. It's not a title in this respect. It's actually his name. That's why he's Swami Maharaj. And Srila Prabhupada actually addressed this in a letter. This letter was to Rai Ram. Now, Rai Rama was one of the editors of Bhakti Guided, so he may have asked Prabhupada something about, you know, in reference to Prabhupada's name appearing in BTG. I'm not sure. It's not. It's in the Veda base, but it's not dated. It's filed under September 1977, but it doesn't have a date or place on it. Anyway, so this is what Srila Prabhupada wrote in a letter. So far, the title Swami is concerned, although this word is used generally for sannyasis, this Swami is my particular name as sannyasi. Therefore, it must be suffixed at the end of my real name, A.C. Bhaktivedanta. So far, the prefix Swami is concerned. Every sannyasi has got to do that. But two ways Swami, Swami A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, is not looking good, not good looking, he said. The end Swami is necessary because it is my sannyas name. As we say, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. The first Swami may be transformed into Goswami. So I think devotees have this idea that it's more, you know, whatever. It's a higher praise if you call Prabhupada Goswami rather than Swami. So they say Bhaktivedanta Swami Ki Jai, Goswami Ki Jai. But it's not his name. So here Prabhupada is saying the first Swami may be transformed into Goswami, which is on the same order of Swami. Therefore, I use the prefix Tridandi Goswami and suffix Swami, as I have printed on my card enclosed herewith. That will be nice. In small lettering, it can be written above my name, Tridandi Goswami. Vaishnav sannyasis are known as Tridandi Goswamis, and Mayavadi sannyasis are known only as Swami. So Prabhupada, that's the way he wrote on his letterhead and his business card, Tridandi Goswami A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So Swami is his name. That's the main point. It's actually Prabhupada's sannyas name. So we shouldn't actually call him Bhaktivedanta Goswami. His name is Bhaktivedanta Swami. All right. So now try to speak on this verse today, which is, I guess you might say, a little mundane. Actually, Prabhupada says this interaction he's saying between Swayambhuva Manu and Lord Brahma. He says, Manu's obedience to his father on material grounds was certainly free from envy. So he's talking about the, you know, relationship between a father and son. Actually, in the word for word, we had in the verse, the word is gurau, unto the superior. So guru, obviously, unto the guru. So any superior is, in one sense, a guru. Especially, of course, the relationship between a father and a son. And that came out here in earlier purport. Also, Srila Prabhupada talked about the parampara in the context of what's going on here, this exchange between the father and the son. So, of course, this is an important thing in as part of civilization. We're not interested just in, you know, transcendental, of course we are ultimately, but we're interested also in just, you know, proper human civilization, which of course is the loss. There's no civilization now. Things are so bad. I was thinking of, even on this particular point, sometimes in children, maybe not so much our children, maybe they may be more respectful, but the idea sometimes it comes up where parents are trying to discipline a child or asking a child to do something, the child rebels and they say, why should I do it? They say, because I'm your father. And the kid is like, so what? So what? What does that mean? You know, doesn't mean anything. So what? So that, you know, that's the kind of quote civilization that we have today. No respect. Or the different words were used in this today. It said, one should serve with full capacity, shaktya. In other words, with all your shakti, you should serve the superior. Apramattai, I thought that was probably translated as if you're sane, then you serve your superior. So pramatta, of course, pramatta means crazy. So apramatta, apramattai. And then the last one I thought was nice, sa'adaram, with great delight, should be actually happy about it. Do it with enthusiasm. So this, of course, you know, this is something that, this is relevant to us, of course, in the service of the spiritual master. So I was going to tell a story that kind of has something to do with father and son, at least one. It's a story from the Bhagavatam. Comes from the ninth canto. It's the story of King Yadu, Yayati, King Yayati. King Yayati was one of the sons. It comes in one of these genealogies in the ninth canto. King Yayati was a son of Nahusha. Nahusha has got kind of he had a little problem himself. This King Nahusha. I'm not sure when it happens chronologically in relationship to the story exactly. But Nahusha, what happened with, you know, Indra, he lost his post for a while after killing Vritrasura, and because he was the devotee, basically, Vritrasura. So Indra had to suffer the reaction. Oh, there's the other one, too, where he was chased by disease personified or whatever. So anyway, he was hiding away at some point. And during that time, Nahusha he had his post, actually. He took over Indra's post somehow. He was given that. But he made advances to Indra's wife, so they got cursed to become a snake. So there's one purport where Prabhupada says in the first canto where he says in his next life he became a snake. So anyway, Nahusha, one of his sons, I think this is the same Nahusha, but I'm not 100% sure. Nahusha had five sons, and one of these sons was Yayati. So what happens with Yayati, the story is actually about, begins with Sharmishtha and Devayani. So Devayani was a daughter of Shukracharya. So Shukracharya, of course, is a Brahmana. So Devayani is a Brahmin girl. And one of her friends was Sharmishtha. And Sharmishtha was a daughter of Vrishaparva. And Vrishaparva is a Kshatriya. So they were playing in the palace gardens one day, and there are thousands of girlfriends. It describes the gardens a little bit, with lakes and ponds and beautiful trees and flowers and birds and so on. So they had thousands of playmates, these two girls that they were playing together. And then it just so happened that, now I don't know where this took place either. Sometimes it's hard to figure out where these things take place. But Lord Shiva came by, riding on his Nandi bull, with Parvati, and actually the girls had been swimming naked, and as soon as they saw Lord Shiva, of course, they ran to cover themselves up. But Sarmishtha took Devayani's clothes by mistake, and Devayani got very upset about that, and she really got heavy with her, criticizing the whole Kshatriya class and how they're, you know, you're just like dogs at the door of us, you know, Brahmanas were so great, and so on. And Sharmishtha, she was a little fiery herself, and she talked back. She said, you Brahmins, you know, if it wasn't for us Kshatriyas, you wouldn't be alive, because you come begging to us, you know. So all these, you know, offending back and forth. And then ultimately she threw her naked into the well and took her clothes. And apparently all the girls left, because there she was, stuck in the well. And then King Yayati came by. He was on a hunting expedition. He wanted to get some water, so he looked into the well, and then there's this naked girl down there. So he gave her his cloth, and he took her by the hand and took her out of the well. And she said, oh, this is so fortuitous, because I'd been cursed that I wouldn't marry a Brahmin. So this is, you know, fate. We're meant to be married. So King Yayati, at first, he didn't want to do it, because this is a pratiloma marriage, a Kshatriya man and a Brahmin girl. But he said, well, I guess this was arranged by fate, so we'll have to do it. So Devayani, she went home and she told her father everything that had happened, her father Shukracharya. And Vrishaparva, he also heard about it. Vrishaparva heard about what had happened. And he knew that, you know, the Devayani was going to tell her father. So Vrishaparva got really nervous. He said, well, when Shukracharya finds out, he's going to come here, and I'm going to be in big trouble because Shukracharya, well, he's a big Brahmin. He can curse me or whatever, you know. I might become a snake or who knows what. So he got really nervous. So before, as Shukracharya was arriving, he ran out there and offered his dandavats and started glorifying him and so on. So Shukracharya kind of softened up somewhat. He said, all right, he said, my daughter's going to marry this King Yayati, and she has some desire. I want you to fulfill whatever she asks. Then I'll be satisfied. So Vrishabhava said, well, I guess I got to do what he asks. So what does she want? She wants your daughter to be her maidservant, along with all her friends. So, well, that's what happened. But then Shukracharya said, but you cannot sleep Shukracharya is telling King Yayati, right? He's telling King, when their marriage was arranged, he's telling King Yayati, yes, Devayani's coming along with Sharmishta. Don't sleep with Sharmishta. That's going to be a big problem. But of course, as fate would have it, he did that, unfortunately. King Yayati, and he slept with Sharmishta. When Devayani discovered that she was pregnant, she became very upset. And Shukracharya, of course, he became very upset, and he cursed King Yayati to lose his youth, to become an old man. And so Shukracharya is very powerful. That was going to take place. BK became an old man, or he was going to become an old man. So King Yayati didn't like that very much. So he said, well, maybe, I know, I'll just ask one of my sons, my nice obedient sons, to exchange their youth for my old age. So he started, as the story goes, at this point he had five sons. Now this is the first, when I read this, wait a minute. She got really upset because she was pregnant. So unless she had triplets, I don't know, because this Sharmishta had three sons. I mean, how'd she end up with three sons? There was so much of a problem with the first one. So I don't know if she had triplets or what. But anyway, she had three sons. Actually, I have their names here somewhere. Yeah, Devayani gave birth to Yadu and Turvasu. And Sharmishta gave birth to Druhyu, Anu, and Puru. So first, this King Yayati, he asked all the boys. First he asked Yadu. Yadu was the eldest. So we know who Yadu is. He's the forefather of the Yadu dynasty that Krishna appeared in. So Yadu said no, but the acharyas let Yadu off the hook because it said he knew somehow that Krishna was going to appear in his dynasty sometime in the future. So he had a spiritual motive for saying no to his father. The other boys, they didn't want to do it. The Druhyu, and Turvasu, and Anu. They didn't have any reason, actually. They just said, well, wait a minute, we don't want to become old. We haven't enjoyed yet. And King Yayati, what he said was, I don't want to, he says, I still have, you know, lusty desires, basically. So, can you let me enjoy? You know, I'm your father. But they wouldn't do it. So finally, we had to get to Puru. So Puru, there's a famous verse. Well, I don't know if it's famous. I learned it because when I came across it, I thought, wow, this is really a nice verse because it applies to the guru. Uttamas chintitam kuryat proktakaritu madhyama adhamos chadayo kuryat akarto charitam pitu. So this is the verse. This is a translation to it. It's from the ninth canto, 9:18-34. A son who acts by anticipating what his father wants him to do is first class. So he was saying, his father was saying, oh, you're so nice, obedient son. And he was thinking, well, I'm not the best. The best is this. I should have figured it out before you asked me. That's basically the idea. A son who acts by anticipating what his father wants him to do is first class. One who acts upon receiving his father's order is second class, and one who executes his father's order irreverently, actually in the Sanskrit it's ashradhaya, without faith, is third class, but a son who refuses his father's order is like his father's stool. Akarto Charitam Pitu. So this Puru, so he's glorified for having done this for his father. Of course, as the story goes on, King Yayati enjoyed with Devayani for 100 years. Then at the end, he finally came to his senses and said, okay, you know, this is... Actually, he wasn't satisfied. That was his conclusion. I tried for 100 years, and I still not, I still want more. I'm still not satisfied. Actually, this point comes up often in the Bhagavatam. You know, we know it's like just adding fuel to the fire. It doesn't take care of it. So but then he told a story to Devayani about this he-goat and she-goat, you know, which was pretty obvious what he was talking about, since the he-goat found a she-goat in a well, or I think something like that. So it was pretty obvious. And then he renounced, and it says he got liberation, actually. He came to his senses. And his son, Puru got his youth back, and he lived for some time. Now, of course, as I was saying, we know who Yadu, he's the head of the Yadu dynasty. These other ones, these other sons, probably, he gives a list in some purport, although I don't remember exactly, but one of them is the forefather of the Greeks, and another one is the forefather of the Turks, and I forget who the other one was. And then Puru, a famous person in his dynasty, is Runtidev. So we know the story of Runtidev, that amazing king who just gave away everything. He was going to die, even though he's giving away all his food after he's done this great fast. So that's that story. Of course, the moral of the story comes in this, really, in this, you know, how you react to your spiritual master and follow his order. I'll just tell just another father and son story. This one's a little shorter. This is, let's see. There was a king. This is actually, the father's name was Nabhaga. So this is another one. It comes in the genealogy. The father's name was Nabhaga, and his son was Nabhaga, the son who's the story's mostly about. So this Nabhaga, he had other sons. And Nabhaga, the young son, he went away to the Gurukul. And he was there for a long time. So at some point it came, I don't know why, because the father wasn't dead, but the sons divided up the father's property. And then Nabhaga, he just showed up. They were thinking that he was going to stay and become a Naishtika Brahmachari. But then he shows up one day and he says, so what have you given me of our father's property? And they looked at each other like, we've given you our father as your property. And he said, okay. So then he went to see Dad, and he said, Dad, my brothers told me that you're my property. I'm inheriting you as my property. And he said, don't listen to those rascal liars. They don't know what they're talking about. I'm not your property. What are you talking about? So he said, I'll tell you how you can get some wealth, because, you know, he's going to become a grihasthi, he needs some money. He said they're descendant priests of Angira Rishi who are performing sacrifice regularly. And for some reason, every sixth day, they get bewildered and they make some mistakes. So you go there and you teach them. This is a verse. It says, go to those great souls and describe two Vedic hymns pertaining to Vaishvadeva. When the great sages have completed the sacrifice and are going to the heavenly planets, they will give you the remnants of the money they have received from the sacrifice. So that's what happened. He went there, he gave them some instruction, and they were happy with him. So at the end, apparently they by doing this sacrifice, the details aren't given, but somehow there's wealth that came as a result of the sacrifice. So they gave it all to him, so he was going to be set. He had his trust fund for life. But then all of a sudden somebody shows up. It's interesting because he's described, just a description is given, this person shows up, and he's described his Krishna Darshana. Now Prabhupada translates this as a black-looking person, Krishna Darshana. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in one purport, he said, this can also be translated as one who is always seeing Krishna, always has Krishna in his vision. So when you hear the story, you just hear this black-looking person. You don't know who it is. So he comes and he says, actually, that's not your wealth, that's my wealth. That belongs to me. And this son, Nabhaga, he says, no. He said, my father said that this would be my wealth. He said, well, let's go to your father and we'll get this settled. So when they go there, then maybe his father knows, but the son doesn't know. The father knows, oh, this is Lord Shiva. And he said, so he tells his son, he says, yes, actually, this particular sacrifice, all the remnants belong to Lord Shiva. So then the son is very submissive and humble. And Nabhaga says, oh, yes, you know, please take it. No problem. Everything's okay. So then actually what happens, I think it's in one of the purports. It says this is actually a famous story in the Vedas, that Lord Shiva gives instructions in transcendental knowledge to this Nabhaga, because he's very satisfied. And he also gives him all the wealth. You can keep the money and I'll also teach you Vedic knowledge. So that's another father-son story. Now, what's interesting of that, this Nabhaga, his son, is Ambarish Maharaj. So that's an important little part of this story, of course. Ambarish Maharaj. What's interesting, I found this interesting in the story of Ambarish Maharaj, because, of course, Sudarshan Chakra shows up when Durvasa Muni creates this demon with some of his hair, and Sudarshan Chakra shows up. So it's actually, it says earlier that Ambarish Maharaj was such a great devotee that Lord Krishna gave him, basically the way it's presented, at least in the translation, it sounds like Krishna told Sudarshan Chakra to be on standby for this devotee, basically. You keep your eye on this person, if there's Ambarish Maharaj, and if there's any problem, then you come and you take care of it. So he was ready. Sudarshan was ready. He was Johnny on the spot. He appeared right there. Which another connected point is that actually in Chaitanya Lila, Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a pastime of Lord Chaitanya when he's going to from Bengal to Orissa. He went back and forth a few times. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's one time, one interesting thing about Chaitanya Bhagavat as opposed to Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a lot of Lord Chaitanya being openly, his ecstasies are very open and revealing himself as Krishna also quite more openly. Devotees tend to know more, are more aware of it. But he says, especially he's really in ecstasy, of course, after he goes to Gaya, he comes back and then he decides to go to, and after he takes sannyas especially. So he's traveling with his devotees, and they get on a boat. First of all, I was just reading this recently. It was really treacherous traveling during those times. It was very, very dangerous. I mean, there were murderers all over the place. In fact, I was even thinking, any travel during those times, it was people were traveling through jungles. Just, you know, we hear about Lord Chaitanya going through the Jarikanda forest, and I'm thinking, whoa, lions, tigers, and bears. Oh, my. And poisonous snakes, you have to sleep out there, you know, all the weather, and it's like really heavy traveling. Imagine Shivananda Shena taking that, saying, bringing that whole group, like 200 devotees. Of course, he has to pay all the tolls. In fact, they got to one place where they were going to cross the border. This Lord Chaitanya is coming. And they say, no, the border's closed. Nobody goes. Nobody. There's you know, like a feud between these two provinces, Orissa and Bengal. So nobody's going there anymore. So there were a couple of instances I may even be getting up. One was he begged the king. Of course, anyone who saw Lord Chaitanya became transformed. So the person in charge of that region, Lord Chaitanya just said, no, we have to go, we're going to go. Or the devotee said, he's going to go, whether you allow him to or not. So he arranged somehow with boats and soldiers and so on to get him through there. But one time they were just crossing, because they had to cross a lot of rivers. So there was a ferryman taking them. And of course, they're always afraid of pirates and other, you know, dangers are there. But Lord Chaitanya gets on the boat and starts dancing around, you know, in ecstasy. And this person is thinking, we're all going to drown here in the middle of the boat. And the devotees are getting nervous. What's going to happen? So Lord Chaitanya says, what's wrong with all of you? You're all devotees of the Lord. Don't you see Sudarshan Chakra is here? Sudarshan Chakra is always ready to protect the devotees. What are you worrying about? Stop worrying. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That was Lord Chaitanya. So at that, you know, in that instance there, during that pastime, Lord Chaitanya, he said like that, don't worry. Sudarshan Chakra is always there to protect the devotees. So that's a little something, trying to make something out of this verse. Anybody like to ask or add or subtract? I had a few others here, Anga and Vena. That's, you know, that's a story too, father and son. Father Anga got so, you know, his son was such a demon, he was throwing his playmates into the river and killing him. So Anga just took off in the middle of the night. Actually, he said, it's good to have a son like this. You get renounced. Pretty easy to leave home. Of course, it's not so nice for the citizens. That's another thing. Yes.
I think in the same pastime, Chaitanya Bhagavat, in the purport, there's one verse that's very interesting. It says something, I don't know the first line. It says, Dattva Chakra Charakshartam Nanischinto Janardana, that after giving his Sudarshan Chakra, Lord Janardana is not satisfied. He's not free from anxiety. And then it goes on that the second line says that he goes and personally protects his devotees. So I was always wondering about that. Maybe that is that particular instance itself, but the context of that verse, I don't know if there's any other pastimes.
You're presenting the idea that Krishna's not, he feels that he always has to do more. Is that's the idea?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's Krishna's love for his devotees. I was thinking there's another pastime like that, too. Oh, I know what it was. Sudama Vipra. He didn't let him know that he was giving him all this wealth because he was embarrassed. He was embarrassed that I'm just giving him this, you know, palace and all these, you know, gold and diamonds and all these things, but that's nothing compared to what he gave me. Because of his devotion, you know, flat rice, which he didn't want to give. But his love for me, I can't reciprocate it. You know, all I can do is give him some, you know, opulence like this. So Krishna feels like that. He always feels indebted. We know, of course, with the gopis, he says it, like, I can never repay you. So that's part of Krishna's heart. He worships his devotees. He's the greatest servant of his devotee.
All right. Some other...
So the story with Devayani and Kat and Devayani.
Sharmishta.
Yeah. So Devayani couldn't marry a Brahmana because she was coerced by Kacha. Previously, she was in love with Kacha, who was the son of a demigod.
Oh, yeah, Kacha.
And then he coerced her that she cannot marry a Brahmana. So that was why she, you know, destiny. Uh-huh. Added that she marry this other guy. Yeah.
Okay. Or Ekadashi Vrata has a question.
Thank you. Actually, I was going to mention that also. And in that pastime, that she wanted to marry him. He didn't want to marry her, so she cursed him first. She cursed him, and then so he cursed her that she would never marry a Brahmana. And then I was always thinking of the...
Yeah, I'm not hearing this. No, who cursed first? He cursed her. No, she cursed him, and then he cursed her, right?
That's yes.
We're talking about Devayani and this, what's his name? Kacha, I think.
Yeah.
So why did she curse him?
She wanted him to marry her.
She wanted to marry him, but he didn't. I had something else. She wanted to marry him, but he didn't want to marry her.
Oh, so that's why she cursed him.
Yeah.
Okay, then he cursed her back.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember. Okay, and then the other thing was...
Oh, what was her curse? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember. Was thinking of, you mentioned the different levels of sons and how they respond to their father's requests, and I thought of Bhishma Dev, who was like top level because his father didn't ask him to take that vow, but because he wanted to please his father, he just volunteered that vow that was, for a Kshatriya, was so horrible.
Yeah, that's nice. I was thinking to Prabhupada's servants, when they served him for a long time, they would probably just, you know, turn his head a little bit. they would know what Prabhupada wanted. They could predict exactly what he wanted. That familiarity. And of course, it comes from the desire to serve, obviously, you know. That's nice. Yes?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice class and lots of good examples. My question is about reality, current, in the current world. Like the fathers are not protecting their children. There is a lot, I mean, massive example of fathers leaving their children.
And there is also... That's the whole messed up age we live in, and everything's... is the question, what kind of duty does the son have to the father when the father is not a father?
My question is, how is that affecting the world? Because also fathers are abusing their own children, girls or boys, you know.
It's hell out there. Yeah. Prabhupada, over and over again, especially in his last year or two, he was always criticizing the so-called civilization of dogs and hogs and gambles and asses and hogs and dogs. They're all animals, he would say. It's just completely useless civilization. And it's getting worse and worse. Like you're saying, there's all kinds of horrible things going on. So it's like, you know, to try to apply some standards to it for, you know, one side or the other. Just like the idea, of course we know, you know, this comes up, the idea of the relationship between men and women and husband and wife, and that women should always be protected. And then the women, you know, women are rebellious, but maybe that's because they're not being protected. That, you know, there's that whole thing. So the social system is just, it's just in tatters. It's just a mess. So it's hard to, you know, I mean, people, they're still there somewhat. Often one context I think of this in, we have a bit of a problem with like evangelical Christians because they don't tend to like Hare Krishnas too much. But from the moral point of view and that kind of thing, they're actually quite good. You know, they tend to have good families, and they emphasize these kinds of things. So that there's definitely some benefit there, social fabric. They're really into that kind of thing. But overall, of course, the world is becoming more and more atheistic, and it's just a mess out there. It's really hard. It's really difficult. Just imagine. I can't imagine being a school teacher in a public school these days. You know, especially certain places. Oh my God, the discipline is really, really heavy. Oh, you're talking about no fathers. Well, of course, that's a big problem. In certain communities, you know, mostly they don't have fathers, and they're growing up to be gangsters. You know, so the jails are filled with actually young people. I'll just this little aside. I noticed. You know, it became a fad. I guess maybe it's still a fad, where certain people wear their pants kind of hanging, falling off. You know. Are really, really baggy clothes. I heard that this actually came from prison because they didn't have clothes for the young boys. There's so many of them are going into prison. So they had to wear adult clothes. So then it became kind of cool. You come out of prison and you have these baggy clothes. You know, it became stylish. You know? Somebody makes millions of dollars out of it, you know, prison wear. But it shows how, you know, that's, you know, the prison's full of these boys, you know, because they don't have any parents. There's no discipline. So it's just a mess. The whole thing is such a mess.
Yeah, but if you look at this example that you gave about he asked for, get the youth. He wanted to give.
Yeah.
I mean, you really look at that example. I mean, we don't have to see it far away. Like, we're talking about, you know, the Vedic civilization. What kind of father is he that he is asking? I mean, isn't he ashamed to ask his sons that, hey, I have lusty desires, and could you take
It seems like the Bhagavatam has a lot of extreme examples, I think. They just... is to show, just look how surrendered this son was, you know, just completely surrendered to his father. Even something as extreme as that his father is asking him to do, he's saying, yes, I'll do it. And I'm not even first class because I should have offered in the first place. So see, it's meant to show the kind of mood, and you know, it's extreme because in one sense too, you remember it because it's so extreme. But then the principle is there. So we're being taught these principles in different ways. And you know, the other thing is, I was mentioning in my last class, I think sometimes it's hard to relate to some of the things that went on in these cultures previously, even, because the world was so different then. There's all these miracles taking place all the time and all these curses that actually come true. I mean, I might curse you, but nothing's going to happen. You know? Things really happened back then. So it was, in many ways, things were quite different. So there were, you know, from our point of view now, it's hard to relate to. It seems so extreme. But so we take the lesson, you know, we take the lesson, the boy's heart, how he reacted to his father's request.
I guess these are the exceptional cases. Not nowadays it's the norm, but I guess at that time this was an exception. Even as far as not growing up without a father, you have Bhishmadev. We're talking about Bhishmadev. He also actually grew up without a father.
Yeah.
Ganga took him to the heavenly planets, and you know, and he grew up without a father. But anyway, just some thoughts.
I was thinking, Maramati, when you said, what kind of father will ask such a question? But isn't this another example of how lust can cover your intelligence? You're not thinking.
How about what?
Yeah, lust covers intelligence.
Yeah, well, that's a lesson there. It's so strong, you do such a really kind of a despicable thing, really. Take your son's youth, give him an old age. And that's true, because it's lust. And again, of course, he wasn't satisfied either. Of course, one thing we hear also, you know, Devayani, she was probably, you know, so beautiful. We hear about how these women are just so beautiful. It's like every man has his price, you know, this saying. So, you know, when the woman's beauty is so much, it knocks you off your horse or it knocks you off your airplane, and you're just, shocked by the beauty. It's kind of hard to imagine, isn't it? There's eyes, nose, mouth. what can you do to it? So I don't know. So, but it is like that. It's like sometimes the men are just overwhelmed. They're just maddened by the beauty of a woman. You know? So imagine Haridas Thakur, Maya Devi herself, every attractive feature of the material world personified in one female form. And Haridas Thakur is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
But we see great personality like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They glorify King Jayati's realization.
They glorify who or what?
King Jayati's realization. Are glorified by our Acharya.
Oh, glorified his renunciation.
Yes.
Well, because he renounced ultimately at the end.
Yes.
Yeah. He got liberation.
But that came from the deep realization that he went through horrible lust. And I don't know if it would come without experiencing what he went through.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's interesting. Because the whole argument is, well, we have to live through our youth. That's what Daksha was preaching to Narada Muni. That these boys have to live an ordinary life so they can, you know, get through this. And they can experience material life and then they can renounce at a certain stage. And of course, that's the way Varnashram goes, the ashrams. You work your way through. You have enough of grihastha life and you say, okay, I'm done with this. Move along. So somehow, one thing is, of course, there are different kinds of people. Just like there are Naishtika Brahmacharis who never get married. And they can do it. And there are others who can't. Can't do it. So, different kinds of people, they may need different kinds of lessons. Some need to go through it. Some go through it and don't even learn over and over again, just like the jails are full of repeat offenders. Actually, most people in jail are repeat offenders. They keep going back. You know. Why not? They get free room and board, you know, the mind. And they, get accustomed to that culture too. You know, they get acclimated, you might say. They know what it's like to live, you know, they know how to live there, kind of a comfortable way, you might say. They get outside, they don't know what to do. They can't exist outside. Anyway, that's beside the point.
Yeah, all their friends are there.
Yeah, all their friends are there, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about how the cultural norms seemed different then, but it's the same three modes then as now.
Yeah.
You know, same three modes. And also, you know, what's a miracle, you know? I mean, a lot of stuff in the modern world would seem miraculous in a different cultural context. I mean, we got pretty good roads now.
Yeah, you know, I know,
so,
that's true.
You know, it's like you sort of get accustomed to whatever's happening pretty quickly.
Yeah, although, you know, we see certain things, just like, you know, different kinds of social etiquette, how guests are received and washing feet and, you know, those things like that. People would think today, what? Washing someone's feet when they come to your house? What? So, you know, there are a lot of different things that we kind of react to. It's like, it seems kind of strange. But it's right. I mean, there's the three modes of nature, and human nature is the same, although still, you know, you live in different times, and it certainly affects the way you think. Just like what's acceptable now, people think nothing of it, you know. What do you mean abortion's wrong? What's wrong with you? You know. That's the way, because people are just, they're so, you know, hardened. Their hearts are so hardened by the times. Yes.
Hare Krishna. This is from the Kirtan Standards book, since you mentioned it.
Uh-huh.
So we say Jai Jai Gurudev or Jai Gurudeva. Like, oftentimes I hear Kirtan ends with that. So here it says like Jai Gurudeva is impersonal and it comes from Sahajiya Sampradayas and like lots of things. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said something to the effect, should I not teach my disciples to chant Jai Gurudeva?
Well, I don't want to get into every point in that book, so that's just one of them. One of them is Jai Veda Swami, when he does. Now, you know, Jai Veda Swami has a reputation of being has quite strong opinions about things. But he makes clear in this book what Prabhupada said, and then sometimes he'll give his own interpretation of it, you might say. So you can take it or leave it, his interpretation of things. So how to apply all of these things that Prabhupada did, there's time and circumstance considerations. But certain things Prabhupada did repeatedly, so it's pretty, you know, the lessons are pretty clear. So I didn't know the whole discussion of Jai Gurudev. I mean, there are many, it's a common thing in ISKCON. You know, we say Prabhupada's name and devotees refer to their spiritual master as Gurudev. It's a common thing. So for them to sing it in kirtan seems okay. So, you know, there's this kind of thing can maybe take some discussion. Even though if Prabhupada might have said something, I think Prabhupada did say at one point, he didn't like being called Gurudev himself, from what I understand. Although devotees do sing it to Prabhupada, I don't myself, because I have this idea, maybe it's not, I can't quote exactly where it comes from, but I had this idea that Prabhupada didn't like it because he said it was impersonal. So I prefer just to say Prabhupada, but that's just me. I'm not making that a rule. But anyway, I think it's a good idea for devotees to read this book and get to at least be informed about what Prabhupada said at different times. I mean, Prabhupada would send his servants down, go tell this person to stop singing that in the middle of kirtan. Be a fired up kirtan, and everyone's jumping up and down. And then the devotee would, you know, pull the kirtan leader out. And Prabhupada would say, why are you singing that? Where did you get that? You know, this comes from these sahajiyas or something. Or don't add anything. You Americans are always adding things. Stop adding things, you know. So we definitely have things added here and there in our liturgy now. So that, anyway, that was the context that I wanted to bring up, this Dui Padi Loilo Sharana. It's just something that got, and now we say it as the translation. It's added on to the translation, right? That last line that we say, you let, what is it? What's the last line that we used to? Let your fame, you spill over these. We take shelter at your lotus feet. That's supposedly what that means. That's not part of the original song. We take shelter of your lotus feet. But I'm not saying we have to stop saying it, but it's not part of the song. It's this Dui Padi Loilo Sharana. That's the so-called translation, although apparently it's just gibberish. It's not proper language. We're just saying some nonsense thing. I always think of this too with, anyway, I don't want to get into the whole thing about mispronunciation, but who knows what we're saying, you know? I'll give one example that I hear. I hear every day so many things. But at Mangalarti, there's ukta and there's yukta. They're not the same thing. Uktastata bhavyata eva sudbi. It's not yukta. Yukta means to engage, and ukta means say, saying or said. It's, you know, the engaging and saying, they're not the same thing. So the word yukta does appear. Yukta is related to yoga. It means engaging. And ukta has to do with speaking. So if you say yukta rather than ukta, you're saying something that doesn't make any sense. You're just saying some nonsense. So I'm thinking, you know, whenever you mispronounce Sanskrit, who knows what you're saying? Maybe it's a good idea. At least learn the morning program songs. You know? Open the songbook and look at each syllable and make sure you're saying it right. You know? All right, I'll get off my high horse here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.